So Brishut HaRavanim and all of you guys, the best way to have people do Hachana preparation for a shir is to give out the source sheet like 10, 15 minutes in advance. And every single person by now has looked down, oh, this is interesting, that's interesting. So I hope that you, if you were one of those people who I saw looking down at the source sheet, reading the source sheet, looking at the different, well, at least there's one picture, so that's always exciting when there's a picture on a source sheet. I hope that you had the opportunity to think about some of the questions, but let's talk a little bit about the fast of the 8th of Tevet. So as Rabbi Shostak mentioned, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, in Simen Tafkuf Pei, it's a list of days on which not such great things happen to the Jewish people, on which some tzaddikim fast, and says the Shulchan Aruch, B'shmona B'teves, in source number one, on the 8th day of Teves, Nichtiva HaTorah Yevanis, the Torah was written in Greek, B'mei Talmai HaMelech, in the days of King Talmi, V'yachoshech Ba'olam Shlosha Yamim, and there were 3 days of darkness in the world. Okay, so again, it tells us there was a king named Talmi, actually, as Rabbi Applebaum noted to me, but this is very well documented history, there were a bunch of Talmis. Like all the king names, there were a bunch of them. The first, the second, the third, some of them had different last names, some of them had different qualities. There were a lot of different Talmis, but one of them, okay, one of these King Talmis, who was a king in Egypt, by the way, he was a Greek king in Egypt, and he had this whole Ptolemaic empire, and he requested, apparently, and there's discussions of the story we're going to see inside in Masechet Sofrim, but in other places as well, he requested that the Torah be translated into Greek for him. And, says Shulchan Aruch, this is what happened. It was written in Greek, and there was darkness in the world for 3 days. So first of all, how many people, raise your hands, if you think the world literally did not have light for 3 days, raise your hands. Good. So when Shulchan Aruch says that there was 3 days of darkness in the world, it's probably not intended literally. So my question is, what does it yes mean then? Why would Shulchan Aruch specifically say there was darkness in the world for 3 days because of this translation? And this is the part where you're going to have to participate. So it's a fast day, you don't have any breakfast, so everyone's a little bit hangry. So tell me, why do you think this comparison is used? The world became dark for 3 days. Why do you think that description is used? Someone help me out here. Ezra's already smiling. This is not going to be good. Joey's also smiling. Okay. B'chavod, why do you think it's compared to darkness for 3 days?
Stay with the other darkness for 3 days. So somehow this is nearing the end of some sort of miracle.
Interesting. That's putting a bit of a positive spin on it. Obviously, the context, which is a little bit negative, but you're saying, Choshech, when else did we have 3 days of darkness? Within the Makkah of Choshech, there were 3 days of intense darkness, and maybe that's what it's recalling for us. There was 3 days of intense darkness, no one could move, it was really bad. On the other hand, it was kind of near the end, as you're saying, there's a little bit of nechama in there, like we often see with tragedies. There's a little bit of, okay, it's nearing the end, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, in this case, quite literally. What else might that mean? Very good. So we know that again, kiner mitzvah v'torah or, the Torah is compared to light. The Torah is compared, tells us that it illuminates. Torah illuminates. Now, if something would have degraded the Torah or limited the Torah in some way, it makes sense to describe it as darkness. We have lost our light. Our light has been, again, in some way, disturbed, ruined. I think it's a very interesting idea. Any other ideas? Any other suggestions? Yes?
It's dark, you're vulnerable, and when they translate it towards the Greek, the Jews, we made ourselves vulnerable to attack.
Beautiful. So when the Torah is translated, it may have made us, in a sense, blind. Okay, we weren't able to detect what was coming. Okay, it's a type of tragedy that may have done that. Beautiful. Now, for the last two, I think this is just an important point to make. For Ezra's reason, which takes it back to Tanakh, we understand why the word 3 days of darkness is given. Why would we say 3 days of darkness for you and 3 days of darkness for you? What's significant about the number three here in terms of 3 days of darkness? Anybody want to jump in? I think you already heard the answer to this question announced today. Why 3 days of darkness? Anyone? Because there were 3 days of tragedy that befell the Jewish people on these three calendar days. We know that, again, the Torah is ultimately, and our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ultimately the source of our tragedy. And therefore, as a result, there was darkness for 3 days because we know, Ches Teves, Tes Teves, Yud Teves. These days were almost damaged by what had happened. Now, you can talk about chronology, you can talk about history. It's clear that this event did not predate all of the other events that we're going to discuss. In fact, it was probably the last of those events. Nevertheless, again, there's a certain significance. There were 3 days of darkness because there were already two. Now there are three. Again, we've lost, in some degree, our Torah. Let's take a look at another story, where we're at another version of the story, I should say, where it's retold in a bit of a different light, and then we'll get to our second question, which is what might be so bad about Torah being translated. Okay? In Masechet Sofrim, source number 2, anybody in one of the corners wants to read? Natana wants to read? Can you read source number 2? Source number 2, go ahead. Bechavod. There's an English translation. You can read the English.
There was. A story of 5 elders who wrote the Torah and Greeks who came with the Ptolemies. And that day was a terrible, as terrible for the Jewish people as the day that the golden calf was created, since the Torah could not be properly translated.
Thank you very, very much. Let's have a round of applause. Okay. So here we get a few additional details about this terrible event of the Torah's translation, that there was a story, so it was 5 elders, Talmi calls in these 5 Talmidei Chachamim, presumably, maybe they were just elders and not Talmidei Chachamim, that's why maybe they didn't do such a great job, but, and he said, again, please write the Torah in Greek for me, and says, the Masechet Sofrim, it was as bad as the day that the golden calf was created, since the Torah could not be properly translated. So let's go through again our same question as before, we're only about halfway through, so that's a time-wise, we're pretty safe. Why would we compare the writing of the Torah in Greek to the golden calf? Again, before we talk about 3 days of darkness, we had really nice interpretations. Yashar Koach.
The golden calf is sort of an intermediate between the Jews and God. So this translation, which can't really replace the Torah, is blocking the real meaning of the Torah from them.
Beautiful. So I think one really nice idea is exactly this. Moshe was simply like this channel for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to flow down through to us. We know Moshe was, of course, an intermediary in some degree between us and God, but really it was just a faithful transmission. There was nothing else in the middle that we might have thought was a barrier for us. Moshe was basically bringing down Hashem's words to us so purely and cleanly. However, when Moshe got replaced by the eagle was, as many note, an intermediary. And intermediaries with God, especially when you start to think that intermediary has some power, is a really, really bad thing. And that's a very clear parallel to what happens here. What happens here is, once the Torah gets translated into Greek, what do people start doing? They start saying, oh, here's the Torah. This is the Torah. Right? Here I have this Greek book. It's the Torah. And you start giving value to the middle stage, which clearly, who's the real one in charge? What's the real word of Hashem? Is the real Torah, written in Lashon HaKodesh. None of this Greek business. I think that's a very, very interesting idea as well. Any other suggestions? Why is this like the Egel of all things? Again, why is it compared to the Egel? Why isn't it compared to, I don't know, the Meraglim? Like there were lots of tragedies in Jewish history, that we know. So why specifically is it like the day on which the Egel was created? Anyone? Rebbeim, by the way, it's open to you as well. I'd love to learn from you. It doesn't just have to be me telling you what I think in each of these scenarios. What might have made this event like the Egel, like the golden calf?
You could say that the Egel, you sort of, we've lost our chance at the first of the book, and we sort of lost nice. Something very Kadosh. And you could say here too that when we wrote the Torah into Greek, we were taking away the true, the original.
Yeah, I think it's a very beautiful idea. Although it may have been more apt, according to what you're saying, to say the day on which the Luchos were broken. But we know what caused the Luchos to be broken, what caused the loss of the first Luchos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe was the Ekel Hazav, was the golden calf. As a result, very fascinating suggestion, thank you. This action of translating the Torah into Greek also caused such a loss of the original Torah. Okay, this translation, although it may have been only a one-step process for one person, ultimately, what did it do? It distanced us, it ruined for us the original flavor of Torah. Any other suggestions? I thought maybe I saw one more hand. Okay, thank you for your insights on that. And let's try to figure out one more thing before we move on to the final story. Okay, we're about two-thirds of the way there. So the question is, what is wrong with the Torah being translated based on all of the things you have told me until now? There were a lot of assumptions about the issue with the Torah being translated. What would you say is the issue with the Torah being translated? Okay, what's the problem? Why would we be so sad? Why was it dark in the world? Why was it like an ego? So some of the issues that have come up already, just to summarize for you, have been the fact that people lose their ability to get the real Torah. The real Torah is in Lashon HaKodesh, and people lose that ability to get there. Okay, what we would say is, essentially, when you translate something into another language, there's going to be stuff that we call lost in translation. And therefore, the Torah is being lost. That's a terrible, terrible thing, and we shouldn't want that to happen. Number two, here's a very interesting one. This is a bit of a historical point on the last one. Who was this translation for? Some say this translation of Torah was for the non-Jews. It was for King Ptolemy and for other non-Jewish people who wanted to access the Torah. We feel that as the Jewish people, we are special because we have the Torah. But now, once the Torah becomes easily accessible to the other nations, perhaps there's something about that that dulls what the Jewish people are, and that might be a reason for mourning. Okay. Another possibility? Yes?
I just have a question about this point. None of the Christians at that point are translated as well.
There were no Christians at that point. Yes. Okay? But I was going to get to that historical tidbit. It so happens to be, just I'll finish and then I'll take the Holy Rabbi's point. It so happens to be, that does anybody know what happened to this? We still have what, according to many people, is this translation of the Torah. Anybody know what happened to this translation of the Torah? Jews basically abandoned it. It was taken over by the early Christians. The early Christians treated it as if it was the real Torah, made all sorts of inappropriate drashos based off of it, read all sorts of allusions to Yashka in it, all sorts of stuff that was very, very not good. And by the way, I think that that might be another reason why a later source says, like, the day of the Egel, right? Because it was something which brought about tremendous avodah zarah. As a result, that might be another parallel as well. Yes?
I'm just going to observe, just to bolster your point you just made. I'm not aware of any comments that are negative about Targum Pulpus, let's say. If anything, the Aramaic translation is very holy and revered. Mm-hmm. And that was internal. That wasn't for someone else. That was for us, the people who struggled. And just to support your point, the Greek translation wasn't for us. It was for someone else. And that sort
of... Yep, so there are many people that make the point. We even note that Chazal tell us that the Torah was translated into 70 languages at points during Tanakh, and it was written down. So it's not necessarily that all translations are necessarily bad because of their inadequacy to express it in the original language, but that definitely is an approach that people take. Let's now quickly read the third story before we finish up. Can I have someone from the other corner who wants to read the third story here, the second part of Maseches Sofrim? Anyone? Go ahead.
Aside from there?
From there's another story, yeah.
There's another story with the thing with Ptolemy, who gathered 72 elders and placed them in 72 houses and didn't reveal why he had gathered them. Entered each of them and said, "Write me a copy of the Torah of Moshe." Hashem gave each of them special insight, and each a copy was identical. They changed 13 things.
So this is a famous story that's being retold by Maseches Sofrim that's found in the Gemara. It's found in actually an ancient letter from that time which describes a very similar story. There's some minor differences, you know, how many Chacham was it? Was it 70 or 72? But ultimately, it's a very, very famous story where King Ptolemy, possibly the same one, possibly a different one, tells them, "I want you to translate the Torah." And again, that's a very tough task. And then he puts them in 72 separate places, or 70 separate places, and says, "Here you go." And they all translated in exactly the same way, including, says Maseches Sofrim in the Gemara, a number of places where they didn't translate it in a literal manner. They actually changed things for whatever reason that was necessary. That's a separate shear. And they all made the exact same changes. Okay, a lot of very fascinating stuff to talk about within that. Now, what's interesting about this, there's a great line that I heard B'Shem Rav Huttner from Yitzchak Breidowitz in a shir he had on this topic, which I utilized in preparing this, although the sources I had from before I heard the shir. But he said, Rav Huttner said it would have been a much bigger miracle if the 72 elders were in the same room and they came up with the same version of the Torah. 72 different rooms, that's not such a big nace, but the same room, that would be impressive. Just a little bit of humor to keep us up in the morning. Regardless, what's the difference about the way this story is told and all the other stories? Why is this story different? What do you see about the tone of Masechet Sofrim? What do you see that's significantly different between this story and the other two descriptions of this event or similar events? Yes?
Seems like a positive outcome.
Number one, there's no, and this was the Egel, and this was Days of Darkness. Number one. What else?
The previous one says this is the story of the elders. This one's the story of the king.
Okay, you're being Medayak in Hebrew a little bit. It says this was the story of the king. I hear that. I'm not sure why it says Shuv Maisa. I think it may just be a language thing in Masechet Sofrim, but it's a good point that you picked up on, that maybe the focus is different, right? We talked about who is it written for. Maybe this might be different, yes?
The fact that they all miraculously wrote the same thing could somehow prove that the translation is more legitimate.
Okay, so if we say that God assisted them to make a precise translation, it could be that this translation was a much better translation, or number two, it shows that God was happy with this translation, yes?
Here it says that it's a story of elders who wrote it for the king, but in this one it says that he gathered them and told them to do it.
Yeah, so that's the same point that Noah made. I'm not sure of, again, such a deal in Masechet Sofrim per se, but again, that may indicate something about who the translation was for. Okay, ultimately, the different ways that we approach this, okay, I think looking at this story in comparison shows us that probably the opinion that all translations are bad is probably not the case. There probably was something significant about this first translation that was really bad. Now, it may have been, I have one conspiracy theory which I'll share with you, it's like instead of Controversy Club, I guess, which I'll share with you before I leave, but you have the four possible approaches summarized down there, and I'm not going to walk you through each different source and try to say which ones work better, which ones work worse. I think that this sort of discussion, you can actually look at it. By the way, take the paper, fold it up, bring it home, share it with someone if you want. That's why the approaches are there, to remind you of what we discussed. Again, the possibility that everything cannot be communicated properly. Or, I think this particular source, the Masechet Sofrim, very strongly leans towards the fact that the first translation was just a really bad translation. It was bad because now there's this totally corrupt version of the Torah running around. However, when the 72 elders come, and when Talmi realizes that this isn't such a great translation, that actually fixes things a little bit. Nevertheless, again, when the Torah is translated badly, that's a tragedy. When the Torah is translated well, that's not necessarily as much of a tragedy. Again, the possibility of translation was specifically for non-Jews. That's also something that's bad. And then I'll tell you two other things. Number one, approach number four that you can see here on the bottom, which is a bit more of a Musar approach, which we can take also, is it's sad that we had to get to this point. Okay? Some people say, is the translation of Torah into an accurate, so to say, an accurate, with air quotes for those listening by recording, an accurate translation, is that a thing to say that would be bad? No. Art scroll is a great thing. Targum Onkelos is a great thing. Shivim Lashon is a great thing. You know what's sad? That we were so distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so distant from Lashon HaKodesh, so distant from the Torah, that the only way the Jews could read the Torah was in Greek. When we get to that stage, many say, that's the true tragedy of the 8th of Teves. I'll bring you, again, I said one other conspiracy theory that I didn't say, is that perhaps they were worried after the first translation was so crummy that it would actually cause something bad to happen to the Jews. Oh, you five rabbis are trying to play games with me? You're not translating the Torah properly for me? Maybe there would chas v'shalom be a decree against the Jewish people. In this way, also, to some degree, it parallels the Egel, that the follow-up afterwards was that there was death, there was a plague. Something to think about, but I think hopefully this enhances our understanding of the tragedy of why it was so sad the Torah was translated in this manner, and hopefully allows us to better appreciate what we can do now in terms of our Talmud Torah, in terms of our relating to the Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to repair that on this very same season.